Aloha, everyone. This is Larry Camp, and welcome to the Nobody Knows Your Story podcast, which just happens to come with a side of Hawaii on it. Nobody Knows Your Story is a podcast which I believe will impact each listener in a positive way. As you listen to the experiences that have transformed, shaped, and guided each guest, perhaps you'll better understand your own personal journey. Some will surprise, some will make you question, and some will inspire, but all will leave you in a better place for listening in. As for the Hawaiiana, well, that's just a big part of my life story. So I invite you to check in from time to time, or better still, add Nobody Knows Your Story to your list of favorite podcasts. You'll enjoy hearing the life experiences of people just like you. Catch a vibe.
Vibe with me. I'm really loving these positive days. Sitting by the sea. Ain't no stressing, just looking at waves. And it's alright to be. Just to be messing around anyways. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright if you just catch a vibe. Just catch a vibe with me. As we sitting by the sea. And you know it's alright to be. It's alright, it's alright. I'll catch a vibe with you. It's not the first time, it's nothing new. Cause you know it's just what we do. Catch a vibe, catch a vibe. Catching a vibe like a fish up on the line. Picking a fruit fresh right off of the vine. Nature provide all the thing we need to time. Salt water, sunshine, it got me feeling fine. Good vibes down to the spine, we passing time. Kicking back up on the sand as we recline. Doing anything you love that come to mind. Wind up your waistline to the baseline.
Catch a vibe with me.
I'm really loving these positive days.
Sitting by the sea.
Ain't no stressing, just looking at waves.
And it's alright to be.
Just to be messing around anyways. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright. If you just catch a vibe. Just catch a vibe with me as we sitting by the sea. And you know it's alright to be. It's alright, it's alright. I'll catch a vibe with you. It's not the first time, it's nothing new. Cause you know it's just what we do. Catch a vibe, catch a vibe.
Catch a vibe and never let it go now. Cause you've been working so hard, it's time to slow down. You should be having some fun, just let it flow now. It's time for letting it loose and you know how. Like a river, the vibes are really flowing. Ladies showing their love and bros are growing. Nothing but gratitude and love that we're showing. Just like it's all that we know.
Catch a vibe, no release, it's a keeper. Spread it all around, I hope that it reach ya. Love and positivity, it is my teacher. It is the best thing to feature. Catch a vibe, hold it tight in all your memory. Make a legacy of love and being friendly. Cause if you got a little love, you can send me. Without love, life is empty.
Catch a vibe with me.
I'm really loving these positive days.
Sitting by the sea.
Ain't no stressing, just looking at waves.
And it's alright to be.
Just to be messing around anyways. It's alright, it's alright, it's alright, it's alright.
Aloha, friends, and thanks so much for taking time from what I'm sure is a very busy life. Now, we just heard Ocean with Catch a Vibe. It's a newer song by Ocean, but one that he sings about saltwater sunshine. It's got me feeling fine, and those were big priorities for me for many years. Now, mid-podcast, Kaloi Kai is going to perform All My Life. On this episode of Nobody Knows Your Story, we're going to hear from Jasia Cornwise. She's not only a TEDx speaker, an author, and a master embodied soul coach, she really likes to dance. And as this is her story, I'm not sure if she's going to mention the time that she split her pants while dancing in front of her teacher, who she kind of had a crush on. But hey, that's up to her. So, Jasia, no pressure. It's your story. Welcome to Nobody Knows Your Story.
Oh, so good to be here with you, Larry. Great introduction. Get us laughing right away.
Yeah, well, that had me laughing when I was hearing you tell the story.
I was just going to say, that's on my TEDx, and I opened specifically with that story because I thought, if that doesn't capture people's attention, I don't know what will.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's one of those moments that, you know, if you go through life, you're going to have a few of those, and it's how you respond to those, right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, yeah. Those moments. And often they've been correlated with my favorite thing, dancing, which has also moments been my most embarrassing moments, too.
Well, that, hey, you know what? We all do things that I guess we prefer, meaning maybe it's sports, maybe like you say, it's dancing, maybe whatever. And there's going to be moments when you're performing or doing those things. For me, maybe playing ball when I'm not going to look my best or perform my best, but it's still fun.
Absolutely. If we can't laugh at ourselves through life, it gets pretty tough. And that's one of my goals. And I say that it's not a light ask when you've gone through lots of trauma or you've had a lot of hard experiences, but truly, you know, we're really born to live our joy. We're born to find and live this like amazing, magical being that we were born to be, this child that was innocent, that was never hurt, never attacked, never violated. And really, I think one of the major goals we can have as humans is to fall in love with that one and bring them through to the other side, no matter what happens, and find that joy and that magic in life, no matter what. And that's, you know, that's been my drive.
Yeah. And I'm real big on loving yourself and loving life and just trying to get the most out of every day. And, you know, I want to tell people, because I know part of your story, and if you choose to talk about it, that's fine. But if you're not, I just want to say that you have had some trauma in your life, and I'm just going to say there's a little bit of a trigger warning here for anybody maybe who's gone through some assault and different things like that. If you'd rather pass on this, that's fine. But on the other hand, it's a big part of your story and how you dealt with it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, where you grew up and some of the things that you enjoyed maybe in your youth and kind of what led you down the path that you're on now.
That's a really good question. So yeah, I've had lots of interesting things. I was born in the Detroit, Michigan area. And I was born blind in my left eye, so I already started off a little different and had to like work through those things when people would look at you. And as kids, they're like, what's wrong with your eye? And, you know, all those kinds of things that happen. We all have our own story, our own version of that wound. So, but I got that like kind of right off. Grew up, you know, with really loving parents, imperfect as all parents are. And as a parent now, I know that, you know, we're all here just hopefully trying to evolve our own parenting and family structures and genealogy and ancestral history into the next level of evolution and release what doesn't work and find the best parts of it and bring that forward and bring our own natural light that we were born to be, you know, with that.
Mm-hmm.
Brother, who was my very best friend in trauma, one of my major traumas, maybe the very, very, there was many even before that, but this is a pivotal one, is my brother was killed by a drunk driver. He was 17, not even, he was almost 17, and I was 19, and he was my only sibling and my very best friend. And it shook up. I lost everything, my relationship to my sense of family and community, my sense of religion, my sense of God, my sense of purpose, my sense of meaning. And that happened at a pretty profound time in my life. It's funny, just today, I found some tears coming down about that, realizing that at that moment in my life, I'd not only lost my family and my sense of God, spirit, whatever, but really a sense of optimism that things could go okay in my life. I'd already had enough hard hits. And I think that was kind of like, my life sucks and it always will. But I was determined to have that happen.
Because he was hit by a drunk driver, this wasn't like, I had a brother who passed away, but he had cancer and, you know, went on for months and things like that. When your brother is killed instantly, it's so shocking and just so devastating. And I went through that with one of my children a few years ago who had an aortic rupture, you know, what they call a iliac artery rupture, and was gone in an hour. And I wasn't even in town. So, I mean, I've been on both sides of that. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And it is traumatic. And it's how you choose to deal with that in your life that really kind of, those are the things as I know your life, these are the things that happen in everybody's life, and it's how we choose to deal with them.
Absolutely. And wow, I did not know that about you. And I'm truly, truly sorry for your loss. I mean, as a parent, I live, you know, that understanding that we only have the now, we never know the next time we're going to see someone. I always like try so hard to make sure everything's ended with that I love you and I see you and forgive me and all the things to make sure that we are here together. I remember after my brother was killed, you know, I was like, I won't go to sleep without telling everybody I love them who's in my life. Like, I love you.
It really changes things, doesn't it? I mean, it makes you, I think, live more for the now and for getting the most out of every day. Because like you said earlier, you just never know.
You never know. You never know. And you know, when those things hit really early, as you said, you know, I was 19. I was still like living in the fantasy of like the Mickey Mouse Club and Walt Disney. You know? I thought everything was going to be great. Like life was supposed to be fantastic. And I was going to, you know, I already knew I had some challenge with my eye, but I still was hopeful. And you know, those moments when everything shatters and shatters again, you realize, oh, wow, this isn't all what we thought it was going to be. So what do we want to make it? And that's not always an easy journey. Yeah.
I heard you mention you're kind of made you even question religion or God a little bit. And certainly that is very normal.
Started a whole spiritual path investigation, looking at, you know, well, I think it's, you know, when no one on the outside could comfort me, you know, there was no clergy, there was no rabbi, there was no anyone that could comfort me. And when all of these people who are supposed to be the experts looked at me and said, I don't know what to tell you. And that was the moment I realized, you know, because I still was a very young 19. I was very 19. That was the moment I realized I needed to seek within. I needed to seek new ways, and everything just started opening up. It had to.
Was your family religious in your youth when you were growing up as a, you know, like a grade schooler and stuff?
It was religious. It was religious. It wasn't like extremely religious. It was, but you know, I definitely grew up with a tradition, and that all shattered. That all shattered for me. I couldn't go back to it. I had to widen it and embrace all traditions and no traditions. And ultimately for myself, I had to really go inside and find where, for me, spirit lived. Although I value everybody's take on what brings them meaning and what they see as God's source, spirit, whatever you call it. It is important to find that higher power, that higher place that will allow you to get in sync with your purpose, get in sync with your life, get in sync with the goodness that is here that we're meant to share.
Yeah. So when your brother passed, what was the immediate thing after the shock? And I mean, because this doesn't go away. Like you said, you had a couple of tears today. I mean, this is something that goes on throughout your life because you remember that person and you miss them and you hope you see them again, you know? So, but life does go on.
It does. And my tears today were this gratitude of feeling like I finally let go of the huge wound that put in my soul about what I could actually expect for myself in life. I think it really brought down my expectations for life. It was kind of like, I just needed to survive. You know, it shattered my family. It shattered everything for a long time. And the grief, because he was my only sibling, you know, it left me alone kind of walking through the world. And we weren't just siblings. We were best friends. Like, yeah, when he died, my note to him was under his pillow, processing my dad's illness. And we shared everything. And, you know, that kind of loss, you just like, well, here's my other half. So yeah, it set me from studying to be a teacher to realizing as I was trying to teach English, the only thing I was interested in about it were people's stories, just like you. I wanted the stories, which then sent me to go get my master's in counseling psychology and then to become a shadow coach. But the whole way through, I love to dance. In fact, like I can see my grandma, she'd be like, let's dance. And it was like dancing, even when I was little, you know, I think we all love to dance. It's in us, but so many of us have been shamed away from that. Mm-hmm. But that dancing became another piece to my life where I started using it for my healing. And as many tools as I accumulated as a therapist, as a coach, as a somatically trained coach, as a five rhythms teacher, meditation, breathwork teacher, all of those tools are great. But I really, through this last story that you asked me to speak about, when I look at that journey, I realized what had got me through the biggest transformation was taking that pain through the body, because dance and movement is what allows us to release these unconscious places that when trauma hits, we store it away because it's too much to feel. And so a lot of people are like, well, why would you want to feel that again? How great that you store it away. You don't have to deal with that. But dance is this beautiful way. It just kind of unhinges and releases it without even necessarily knowing what you're letting go of. Of course, the work I do brings in intention and presence and a connection to that. But yeah, I mean, that story, I do want to share a little bit. You know, it's one of the things I've been sharing about in life right now. I've been called to share because I'm trying to think where to start it from, but a few years ago, I was called to speak at the criminal parole trial of one of the men, multiple men, who were involved in a very violent time where I was taken hostage and raped and assaulted and scared to death for hours and hours and hours at gunpoint when I was 27. And that incident, you know, put me, the first thing I did 24 hours later, believe it or not, is I chose to go up on stage, even though I was a psychotherapist at the time, but I was also dancing in a band on stage and all over the world, like dancing for fun. And 24 hours later, I decided to dance and get on stage after this horrific experience. It's not that I wasn't feeling things, but it was the only thing that made sense to me to do. And I had people going, what are you doing after what you just went through? Why would you be in front of hundreds of people dancing? You know, and in my mind, heart, soul, I knew it was the only thing that would make me feel like I wanted to live again, you know, and it sparked the joy, it sparked the healing. And I danced just about every day since. I began renting out a dance studio in San Francisco where I lived at the time, and I would go there every day and I would just turn on the music, and for an hour, I would move and I would shake and I would release and I would dance and I would cry. And then eventually I'd be laughing and then I'd be looking in the mirror and I'd almost be feeling beautiful again and whole again. And that was just rinse, repeat every day amidst all the other things I was doing in my life. And that pretty much, I mean, you can see right here, I have a studio. I have a studio that I built into my home currently where I teach out of and live out of and coach from, but it's my sanctuary of practice. And in order to get through, when I found out I was going to have the opportunity to come to this criminal parole trial, I knew that I was going to need to get ready for it. And I spent a lot of time just moving and shaking and breathing and doing all the things, all my tools that I've been accumulating for, you know, many, you know, 3 decades since to experience that.
Well, I think that everybody handles trauma differently. Yeah. And yeah. So for you to go up 24 hours later and dance, maybe that wouldn't be for somebody else, but hey, grief and trauma, we all do it differently. And I don't think there's a right way necessarily or a wrong way necessarily. It's just whatever works for you. It helps you to be able to move on and move past that incident.
Absolutely. And that is not the only thing I did. Obviously, I was doing so many other things. And sometimes you don't feel like dancing. But by that point in my life, after having already gone through so many traumas, I recognized I'd already been using dance for so long that I knew that that was one way I got feelings and emotion through my body. I wasn't just sitting talking to someone where it's stuck. I wasn't in a repetitive story. It was actually moving through me. And it also made me feel like no one can steal my body. No one can rape my soul. I'm still here. And you get violated at that level, there's so much scarlet letter on you, so much shame. People don't know how to speak to you, deal with you. In fact, honestly, most people never know me for decades. They barely ever ask me questions or talk to me about it or realize the depth of what it was, because who wants to hear about it? Who wants to really hear about these kinds of traumas? So people are left alone with them unless they find access points and safe spaces to really work through them, because they get in deep. They lodge in deep.
Well, and I think a lot of times people, they don't know what to say. They absolutely. You know what I'm saying? It's like when you lose a child or you lose a sibling, that, you know, first everybody's there for you. They're, but then life goes on and then they run into you and they're not sure what to say or what to do. And so I think sometimes the most comfortable thing is just to talk about something else.
Absolutely. I mean, I 100% agree. People, we haven't been trained how to be with grief. There's so much happening all the time in this world. There's so many people suffering. And I think it's just like almost a way that humans keep themselves sane is just by, you know, we focus on the present moment. We're present with what we can, because that is a sane way to be. But when someone is stuck in a trauma or has just gone through something, in a month, people might expect you to be better. And it takes a lifetime for some of these kinds of losses or experiences.
Yeah. So that traumatic event that happened to you, did it change the way that you that you worked as a therapist even? Because
100%,
a lot of times things that happen in our personal lives, they affect us in our work lives and how we interact with even our loved ones and everything else. So because you're a therapist, I thought that would take you to a whole nother level, I would think.
Well, it really did. And, you know, I think the piece, so when my brother was killed, I was 19, I was, you know, training to be a therapist. I think who I became so young walking into to therapy, and then later I trained as a coach. But at that point, I think I knew I was very young. I was the first person to be accepted to the graduate school I went to who was that young, because they said normally they look for people who've experienced more. But I'd gone through such a deep transformation that I could relate with people and I knew what to say. I knew how to get them to talk about it. I knew I wasn't uncomfortable. I think the more intense experiences you've had as a healer, the more comfortable you can be with people if you've actually, you know, carry yourself with it. So yeah, I think that brought ability for me to be with the depth and the pain, the emotional pieces, and be able to just sit in presence with people suffering. When I went through the violation, the rape and the assault and the kidnapping and the hostage, the guns, now that brought me into a whole new level of the realization of how trauma lands in the body in a way that I didn't fully understand before. And so I think that started to translate me wanting to be more proactive with people and to coach them into their bodies and to help them move micro movements and macro movements somatically, to help them find breath work, to help them start going into movement practices. Because I saw for myself that otherwise it just gets jammed up. It really does. And we do a lot of self-sabotage patterns that we're not even aware of. And we're not even sure why we're doing these things, whether we're overspending or overeating or going after things that are wrong or drinking or smoking, whatever it is, that lack of self-care, it's because the body can't even process it. So it's just trying to numb. It's just trying to shut down the feelings. And so if we don't actually get in there and find ways to move with it, it can really take over. So I realized it's much more than just the soul and the spiritual and the mind realm, but how important the aliveness and the presence in the body was.
I thought it was interesting that you were asked if you wanted to come and attend that parole hearing. I believe it had been 26 years.
Yeah. Oh, my first reaction?
Yeah.
Like when I heard this lady, it was like, I mean, I've been doing really well, a successful career, living my life. And it was like, I heard who it was. I knew what she was about to say when she said, I'm calling from the San Francisco. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it was like a veil went on. I wasn't expecting it because I felt like at that point, I'd really released all my trauma. And boy, was there energy and shaking and sweat pouring out of me. And, you know, and my first comment was like, do I have to go? Do I have to do this? And she's like, no, this is your choice. It's an opportunity. Some people never want to do that. But, and it took me a second because my reactive little kid was like, why would I ever want to get near that person again?
Yeah.
But then my adult self calmed down. I breathed, got clear. And I was like, I actually want to see this person. And I want to see who they've become. And I want to show them who I've become. Because, you know, I am someone who always prays for the highest evolution of everyone. I'm not someone who's going to sit and hate on people forever. I want forgiveness. I want everyone's evolution. I have no idea who this guy had become. And you know what? When he walked in the room, I didn't know who he was. I thought he was part of the court. No clue. You know, it was so many years later. He was completely different shape and size and look. I didn't even recognize him.
Well, and there was a part for you that let him see you did not destroy me. You didn't.
Absolutely.
Your act did not define me. I have moved on. I have grown from what happened there. I think that had to be a big part of it too.
Well, you know, it was really interesting because I was going through it because I also felt the need. That is ultimately where I came to. But when I was in the, you know, I had prepared a talk to give because we were asked to speak, and they asked me to write out and really let him know the impact of my life. And believe you me, I was not going to let him down easy. I wanted him to know all the trauma, all the PTSD, all the relationship and sexual sabotage that happened from that, all the terror I lived in people who looked like him for years that created more racism. I didn't want any of that, you know? So he heard it, sadly. He had to hear that, but he also heard who I was now. So I wanted both to be heard because, and the truth is he wasn't let off. Everyone there wanted his best situation to appear. I wanted him to be able to, I mean, he'd been there for a long, long time, but he had healed and cleared some things, but sadly there are pieces he had no clue about yet, and it was going to take more time. But I didn't make that decision. And I was there with forgiveness and with present and with, I'm really hoping that you will find your way to this path and to your freedom, because we all need that. And I understand, you know, I got to hear his background, where he came from. And as someone who's a healer, someone who cares about people and their stories and doesn't believe that people are bad, you know, at a core level, that they've suffered through other experiences. I heard all those sufferings. I heard what his lineage had gone through. And it was very powerful to listen. It was really a unique experience. And I'm so grateful I did get to, you know, when he heard me talk with the compassion and the strength, both, he sobbed. He just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And it was a sob that he needed, not because he was being shamed. It was because he was being seen. It was like when he kept saying, I my name was never released. And I didn't know who you were. I didn't know who I'd harmed all these years, you know. And it was just a powerful thing for him to see, you know, my face.
As you now counsel and talk and provide therapy to others, I'm sure a lot of the people that come to you don't even know your story. They just know you're a good therapist.
And half the people in my life, and I don't even work as a therapist now. So I want to really clarify that I work as an embodied soul coach, because
that's
the
right.
definitions of that really prohibited me from doing some of the other pieces that I find very important.
Yeah. And so let's talk about that for just a minute, because I was a little confused on that myself. What is the difference really? Because I mean, to me, that almost sounds like therapy also, but maybe a little different angle. So what's the connection there?
Between which, I want to make sure I'm answering properly.
Well, because what you're doing now, when I saw that, and I'll be honest, I'd never heard of that before. Embodied coach or
whatever. Body soul coaching. I don't think anyone else calls themselves that. That's a name I made up to kind of.
Well, maybe that's why I'd never heard of it then. I thought, gee, where have I been all my life? I haven't even heard of this, but it does sound like, the title sounds like still somebody providing therapy.
Well, I'm providing tools and support. And so I have a coaching background now. So coaches and therapists, you know, it depends what their wounds are. I'm doing coaching within the realm of anything. So it's not necessarily just trauma. I work with people who are stuck with stress, who want to have breakthroughs in their careers, who are stuck with not finding the love and self-care that they need in the middle of giving to everyone else. So they might be very successful entrepreneurs or working in corporate fields, but they haven't ever been taught to really care and cherish themselves. And that's the basic thing that I'm really teaching. And one of the modalities I use is movement and breath work and dance, as well as mindset practices. And, you know, consciousness, but of course we are who we are. I mean, my very nature, I mean, you could say I went and got a therapy degree, but I was born as a healer. I just was. I mean, anyone who talks to me, they're like, would you stop being a therapist with me? I'm like, I'm being me. It's like when you're someone whose life has carved you into asking deep questions and caring about people. Plus I think I was literally born for this. I mean, they say that when someone was born in the tribal society, blind in an eye, they would be marked as a shaman. And when I read that, because what I was marked with was big glasses and operations telling me there was something wrong with me. And you know, when I read that in my like 1920, Alice Walker talked about this, some other blind, I was like, oh, there, and that makes sense. I'm a seer. You know, so definitions are definitions. You know, we can say that there's some wonderful somatic therapists now, right? Somatics has become a portion. There are therapists now who work from a somatic trauma aware place, right? And they might do some very similar things that I do. At the time when I was training 27 years ago, that was barely developed. So a lot happened in these years. And I've been on the forefront of that, calling myself many things. I studied with Debbie Ford as a shadow coach, which also for me is such a profound way of looking at things, because the shadow is what's stuck inside us. So I use and Five Rhythms with Gabriel Roth. So I meld together a lot of tools. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. And it makes me want to ask another question. That would be, so if somebody comes to you and they are having an issue with, I guess it could be almost anything from what you've just said. Maybe they're having an issue with just the relationship.
Dating, exactly.
Yes,
right.
Yes, because that seems to be something that's out there all the time. You know, we live in a crazy world now where I met my wife at a swimming pool. Now I hear that most people seem to, or a lot anyway, seem to meet online. And so you're talking with somebody often you haven't met, and this may go on for months before you even actually meet them. And hopefully you're talking to the person that they say they are.
Yeah, well, I always coach people that if you're doing an online thing, if they aren't willing to get on a FaceTime immediately, get off the phone. Yeah. Stop talking, because texting is horrible to get to know someone, and you need to see a face and hear a voice and eventually meet them. And if they're not able to do that, then who are they? They're definitely not ready to show up in a relationship.
So if somebody was to come to you, then they're in the relationship, or maybe they were even married, but they're, you know, all the magical stuff that starts out has kind of gotten old and, you know, they're stale. What would you tell somebody like that? I mean, would you have them work on the breathing? Would you have them do some dance moves? Would you incorporate all those things?
I incorporate all those things and I start where people are. So, you know, I don't want to give one prescription, but I do have programs that no matter where you're at, like I have a 12-week daily program that uses all sorts of tools, and it's all set up to go. And then I include some group coaching, and then there's like a VIP level where they do, you know, weekly or every other week, depending on what they want with it. So it's a big program. But the idea behind all of these things is that whether you've lost the magic from a relationship whether you're not living the life you want to, all of these things stem from losing touch with your own inner core and your inner listening. Or maybe you never listened in the first place. A lot of people are in the fantasy with the relationship that the other person is going to make them happy. And believe you me, they might like add some ice cream to the full meal, but if you don't have a full meal inside, no one's going to make you happy. So it comes back to learning to forgive and love and embrace and grow confidence and follow the path that you're really meant to be on, which can be, in our world, we're taught to externalize so much and lose track of our intuition, our instincts. So a lot of this kind of work brings you back into who you really are and nourishing and loving so hard on that part of yourself that you're automatically going to start either accepting and embracing and loving your partner because you love yourself more, or you're going to start going, I am really not in the right space. You're going to start really looking at what needs to happen. Are you going to go get couples therapy? Are you ready for change? You're just not willing to face it. So, but all of it starts from within. I mean, there are things, of course, to work with couples too, if both of them agree, but there is a profound thing about most people don't take the time to really find out who they are. They want to point at all these other externals of this is why I'm happier. This is why things aren't working. Or this is where I lost the magic, but the magic's always in you. And it's up to you to reignite it or to find out even if it's ever been honored before in the first place. You know, most of us were never taught to honor ourselves. Really, we were taught to do what this person said and be like what we're supposed to do over here, or this is what they want from us. And suddenly we vacated our inner knowing. And that happens naturally in life as well as from trauma or stress.
I always tell people when they're looking at a relationship, I say, well, if you think about it, you're very successful in your career. You work really hard at it. Well, if you want to be successful in your relationship, you got to work hard at that too. And a lot of people just
100%.
Don't.
Exactly. Right. Not just point the finger and go, oh, I lost the magic.
Yep. Hey, let's talk about your book for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
Worley, what was behind you writing it? Because, I mean, you can give TED Talks and you can tell people these things, but you decided to put some stuff down into a book that somebody can sit there on their own and read. Is that why you did it?
Yes. And well, you have to understand, I've been told, okay, I don't know if you've ever had an astrologer talk to you, or my entire life, any astrologer I've ever gone to said, you have a book and you need to write it. I've had people since I was in my 20s saying, I'm dreaming about your book being published. I didn't.
Wow.
I mean, when I was 27, after the event, my boyfriend at the time and I decided that I needed to write, and he would put me in this room and not let me out. I mean, by choice, you know, he would support me to just write and write and write. And so I'd started writing this book. And even before that, I'd been writing my dreams. I've always known, that's probably why I went into English and writing in the first place, is I studied that. I knew I was a writer, but what I had to write about felt so vulnerable, and so many things that I knew, number one, I would not publish this book till I felt baked, fried, and ready to be humbled, human, and not embarrassed about anything that was seen. And I also knew I needed to be at a point where I could write in a way that was non-blaming. I could write in a way, I wanted to be at my highest self when I wrote. So I wasn't really like, I don't think I was born to be like a writer, like prolific, because I'm a phenomenal writer with words, but I knew that I have messages to share. So I would put it in and I'd put it on the shelf. I'd put it down. Anyone who's followed me on Facebook, anyone who's known me, is like, I'm writing it this year. I did this, I did that, you know, and I put it back away. I'm like, oh, I'm just writing this for me. Put it back away. And people are like, no, we want to see it. Well, once I got, my father passed, I took him through his death passage a couple of years, right around the same time as right after the trial. He passed, took him through that, came to the other side. And within moments, I feel like my dad pointed to the TEDx stage and had me start writing the book from the other side. I just felt like his heart was like, do it. He had no idea what it was up to. And I just felt 100% support coming through his heart, like, do it now. And when I did that TEDx talk, I realized, oh my gosh, what, you know, I've been here, I've been working in my little bubbles in my communities, leading healing and having healing centers for decades. And yet I never really let myself be seen by the larger world. And I knew it was time. And so this thing came out fast and furious, but it wasn't like I just wrote it. I took pieces and collections from stories and pieces that I had already written, backlogged, and then I tied them in with my present state awareness, my present context of inspiring people with exercises in the book to learn how to move through these things, and inviting them to come towards, reach out potentially to see some of the work I have to offer. Because I really think there are a lot of people who could benefit by meeting me and experiencing some of this kind of stuff for themselves.
It's also nice to be able to be authentic and to share the things that are important to you. And like you say, not just important to you, but things that you believe will help others.
That's really what made me finally publish it, is I realized, oh my gosh, this isn't for me anymore. This is, when I was little, there were books I read that changed my life. And if those people had not written those books, I would not be alive today, because they were the only people talking about some of the experiences I was having. And I realized if I could reach one person with this book and I could change a life, and believe me, I've already changed more than that by doing it, then I wanted to do it. And I just actually received a first place award in 3 different categories from the book fest I entered it into. Just found out 2 weeks ago I won. So here it is. Like, these dreams do come true. You know, just, you just got to keep going at it.
That's awesome. That's great. Hey, so I have to ask you a little bit though, before we wrap things up. You have been to Hawaii. And let me get your take on it, because it's a big part of my past and big part of my life, and love the culture, love the aloha spirit, love the islands, love the weather, love the people. Love the music.
Uh-huh. Love
What's
it.
Your take? What's your take on it?
I absolutely love it. You know, I've been to Maui, Kauai, and the Big Islands, and I love all of them. I mean, every time I go there, and the last time I went there was just when COVID started opening up, I was able to take my son and another girlfriend, and she took her sons, and we took them. It was still at the like tail end of the COVID time, and being there was the deepest healing all of us needed. There was so much softness and love and beauty. You couldn't not be healed by being there. Now, I've never lived on the island, but I have spent time there, and I just find it a place filled with magic, and it's soft. I think that's the most, it's soft, the music's soft. I mean, I know it's not all soft, believe me. I know there's a lot of conflict and a lot of challenge, and it's expensive. And but every time I go, I meet beautiful people, and I feel so held, whether it's by the music or the ocean or the delicious foods and smells and sights. It's just, it's a place of magic. Is that, I don't know, what other take could I have?
Well, exactly. And when we think about Hawaii, and like you said, it's not all soft. It's not all perfect. And no. that's the way the world is. And I personally choose to emphasize the soft, the great, the fun, the healing. And I don't watch a lot of news, because that is not the kind of world I want to be a part of. I mean, you can't not be a part of it, but you know what I'm talking about. I don't dwell on it. My sister will say, "How doesn't it bother you that this is going on?" I go, "Sure it does, but I don't lose any sleep over it, because I can only control what I can control." Yeah, when I go to Hawaii, I am there to just enjoy, to give back if I can, to volunteer, to just being there. I don't have to necessarily be doing anything. One of my favorite things is just to go to the beach, you know, and just sit under an umbrella. I'm a little smarter about the sun now than I was in my younger years, but I'll be under an umbrella and then go out into the waves, ride a couple waves, come back in, just chill for a while. And, you know, so that doesn't cost anything. I mean, it's just so much fun. And it's a big thing we passed on to our children. As a matter of fact, my daughter and her husband are on the Big Island right now as we're doing this interview. My wife is down watching their kids in Long Beach. So, I mean, but we do that. We do that. Last year, we watched them and they went to Kauai. So, I mean, our kids have grown up with the islands and they love it. So when they have their,
what a blessing.
Time, yes, it's just so much fun. And so probably half my guests have been, half of them haven't been. And I just tell them, if you ever get the opportunity, you'll enjoy it. You know,
I think everyone should go to Hawaii in their life if they have the ability to, and to just manifest it, because it is a special, there's nothing like Hawaii. There really isn't.
Yeah.
It's hard to come back.
Well, and the thing that I always would say to people is just be respectful. You know, yeah. The people, the locals there, I mean, they love their island. They're very proud of their heritage, and just be respectful. If there's one thing that will turn them off to tourism, it's when people are disrespectful.
100%. And that's what I meant. I know it's not an easy place. There's just, you know, for so many reasons. But I love what you said too, that, you know, in this life, and I think that's an attitude for someone like you who's gone through obviously some heavy trauma yourself, and we need to be able to understand that if we were in touch with every single trauma that was happening all the time, we couldn't function. We have to be in the present, and we have to feel, when we're living from our love and our hearts, we are going to be affecting positively anything we touch, anywhere we are. And to remember that vibration of love and of presence is healing. Not worrying isn't healing. Griping isn't healing, right? That presence of love.
100%. Yep. Totally agree. Jesse, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your story today. And I'll put the book and link to the TED Talks in the notes as well, so people can look a little bit more into what you're doing, because you're doing a lot of good. And you know, the fact that you chose to, because it is a choice, that you chose to grow and get positivity out of your trauma, it's helping others. And that's what life's all about.
Thank you so much. And you have an amazing voice for podcasts, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank
I got to work on my podcast voice.
Well, thanks again.
Thank you so much. It was fun, Larry.
All right, everyone. Hey, listen, check back in 2 weeks for another interesting guest here on Nobody Knows Your Story. Aloha, Jasia.
Aloha.
Not far away, let's talk story. It's where my mama was born, it's where I come from, it's where my daddy fell in love not long ago.
Let's talk story. Well, a little of this and a little of that.